Good morning. I'm Gail Q, and our guest this morning is Serge Manhayan. Serge has been an active healer and teacher here on the North Coast for several years. Many of you listeners will know him from a personal healing session or attending his heart chakra workshops, or perhaps attending the Friday night School of Livingness this past year. He's also been a guest on this program. The last time was back in May of 2007. Welcome, Serge.
Welcome, Gail. Thank you.
And thanks for joining us this morning. Now, Serge heard me announcing that he'd be able to give us a road report because he was coming over from Lismore, but he actually took the safe route. He went down through Alstonville and Ballina just to make sure he could get here. Thanks for doing that. It's kind of hard not to comment on the weather this last week, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Serge, I'd like to bring some of our teachings from the School of Livingness that we were doing on Friday nights to the Bay FM listeners. So before I get into specific questions, maybe you could just give them a general overall idea of what the School of Livingness is and why you chose in your very busy schedule to make time pretty much on a fortnightly basis to meet with about 200 people, say, in the Ewingsdale Hall. So what is the School of Livingness?
The School of the Livingness was always a project of mine for a long time. It was done in and through many of the workshops and lectures that we present, only it's been isolated in the sense that we can present a lot of the esoteric teachings and make them into a practical transition into modern-day practical temporal world of living. Arcane means ancient knowledge. If you look it up in a dictionary, sometimes it refers to, or the word mystery is associated with the with arcane, or that which is mystery and so forth. But arcane really is just simply ancient knowledge. And that ancient knowledge is truth, and truth can be flexible in any time, any stage, any era. And so if one can connect to the way in which ancient knowledge is by its livingness, not just by its word or its interpretation, we can, in fact, translate that truth to any era and therefore make it flexible for our modern-day living.
Ah, and that's why we've come to know it as a School of Livingness, because it is very much about incorporating it into, even though it's ancient knowledge, we're bringing it into the here and now, into the 21st century. And I often found that I maybe wouldn't really think I got it on the Friday night, and then something would happen immediately afterwards, either a dream that night or something the next day, and I would have that aha moment that, oh, this is exactly that. And so I found it very much was relevant to whatever would present itself to me. And in talking to other participants, I think they found that to be true. Now, what I'd like to do is start with the very last lesson we had, which was Sutra number 8. Do the numbers have any real relevance to the lessons?
Not really. Under esoteric numerology, they have a slight implication and has a slight influence in the way I'll present that particular topic. If it's 7, for example, that's the number of the personality and the number of physiology and physical conditions. So the lesson gets, or the presentation gets influenced to lean towards that. 8 is the number of the soul, so it has a more inspirational type of delivery.
Okay, so it does very much have an impact, but not necessarily one that we need to know about, and it isn't one that's given to the students on the night. Serge, I'm just going to get you to pull the mic perhaps a little away from you, or you lean back a little bit, just because I'm having trouble getting the level not to distort. You've got such a deep, rich voice, which is such a beautiful radio voice, but it probably requires just a little bit of distance. Great.
That's better.
That is good. Thanks. Now, on Sutra number 8, this is the question of choice.
So, correct.
Yeah, let's talk about that. What is the choice, the big choice?
First of all, we've got to know and fully understand what a choice is. If we put ourselves into a situation where the momentum of our previous choices lead us into a situation but where there is no choice but to repeat that ill or not so good pattern, then that in itself is not a true choice. We presented that very, very clearly on the night. For example, if you live a life that consistently exhausts you, there is no choice but to eat very sugary foods or drink a lot of coffee and so forth. So when you say you enjoy a cup of coffee or you enjoy chocolate and so forth, the key is, do you really enjoy that or do you actually need it? In other words, is your body so exhausted that it's craving for sugar?
And probably many of us would answer yes to that question, even though we're trying to be on the path as well.
Well, therefore, the truth is that there is no choice.
So what I'm thinking is that we talked about, I'm just going to turn your mic off there, and I think actually I'm going to go to a movie, a music break, because we just need to do a little adjusting in the studio this morning. And when we have Serge around, it's always interesting energetically what needs to come up and what needs moved. We've talked before in the past when people come into the Ewingsdale Hall and settle down, that there's a lot of shuffling and coughing and sneezing and people kind of expelling energy that doesn't need to be in that room before we can get going. So I think Serge and I need to just take a little minor shuffle this morning. So we're going to go to a music break and we'll be right back. Bay FM 99.9. Good morning. We're here with Serge Ben-Hayon this morning, and we're starting to talk about the School of Livingness, which has been on Friday nights. And the last lesson we had involved the question of choice. And so we were going to explore that this morning. And what more can we say about the question of choice? It's the big choice, the choice to be aware or not be aware.
It is the choice. It's the choice to be aware of yourself at any given moment and not let past choices then carry you through with a momentum of whatever they have been made under or in. And so if you've made bad choices in the past or not so good choices, that you can responsibly say, yes, that didn't lead me to where I should be. We need to be aware of that, just stop and then start to make good choices. But if we don't take the necessary steps to stop and be aware, then we are in the momentum of those choices. And then For some people, it takes many, many years to break out of that cycle, but it usually takes a big thing in their body to shake them, or an accident or something, which is not really necessary.
And the way I understood that lesson is that the choice to be aware is either the first step or a very significant step in changing the choices. You have to actually bring your awareness to the choices that you're making. Is that fair?
It's fair to say that it requires a energetic responsibility. In other words, as honest as one can truly be. For example, if you're doing alcohol and drugs, you might defend that in many ways, but you need to say to yourself, why is it that I need something that is chemically inducing me to be in an altered state? What is it that about me that isn't just happy to be graceful, joyous and harmonious all by myself? What is it to me on a daily basis that I need at the end of the day, or even to get through the day, something that chemically induces me to be in a different state? And that's not a judgment on those who take alcohol or drugs, but it's a form of saying to them, look, stop and think and say, what is it that you need something else to take you out of where you are? There's already enough beauty within us, and if we cannot connect to that beauty, then we have to say honestly what is wrong, rather than seek outer sources to get us through.
So our the awareness that we're talking about, that's an awareness of self, of self actions, rather than necessarily having an awareness of God or a creator or what our relationship is to be with them. It's about an awareness of ourself, is that right?
Yeah, it's an awareness of just self in the sense of where you truly are. And everybody knows that. You don't have to be super clairsentient and super enlightened or have this wonderful dial-up connection with any universal life force. It's already within you. And when we deeply reflect or even contemplate, most of us are honest enough to say that what we are doing, whether what we are doing is right or not right for us.
And to align with God, now if this is a desire to be aligned with God, how would you, any words of advice for people who are wanting to move in that direction? Stop alcohol and drugs and chocolate and caffeine?
Well, if you enjoy a cup of coffee, by all means, have a cup of coffee. And there's a great test to that that we can all use. If you truly enjoy a cup of coffee, there is a wonderful espresso decaf that you can have that doesn't give you a hit. And so if you're after the taste and the flavor of it, you can easily choose to have that. And so if you're making the choice to not have that because you need the hit, what you've got to say is, okay, I won't stop myself from having the cup of coffee, but I have to admit to myself that my own energy levels need an artificial boost. And that's where you've got to be honest enough to say, the way I live my life cannot be true if I need a stimulant to get me through the next 2 hours or 3 hours of the day before I need another stimulant to do exactly the same and to get me through that particular day. Because at night, when we actually shut down and go to sleep, our physiology doesn't always shut down. And so a part of the aging process is the fact that we're not able to be still at night. In other words, we're living 24 hours a day as if we're awake. Even though part of our body falls asleep, our physiology doesn't really shut down and get to reconstitute itself. So making choices is important, and being aware is important. And then once we get in contact with that, aligning to God and doing all sorts of things like that becomes very, very easy. But in relation to connecting to God, if I were to give someone advice or if I was to suggest something, is to actually use that word and don't substitute it for universe or any other word but God.
So you're recommending to own that relationship with God?
Correct.
And do you have a definition for that word? Because it's such a loaded word. So many people do steer clear of that.
And that's the problem. If you're aligned to religion, it has its own interpretation. If you're not aligned to religion, it has its many interpretations. And each religion within itself has its own interpretation, whether you're Judaistic or Catholicism and so forth. So the key is to connect to that word and know what it means to you in your own heart, and not allow those teachings to come from your head, which is also from the outside of you. So connect to it for whatever reason it means for you, and then work on it until it gets to the meaning it truly is that is deep within.
Mm-hmm. Now, Serge, in your teachings, I noticed that there's this paradox of kind of traditional language, like using God, and Lord and Father, whatever terms you use, but you're so anything but traditional in a lot of your teaching as well. Do you think that your personal background or your heritage contributes to how you interpret the information that you're bringing forward?
No, not at all. I free myself of all of that. I'll write about my heritage and tradition one day, and it'll blow everybody away in terms of the flavors that have been influenced all around me. But the key is this, that when we speak, we've got to know what words mean energetically. And if we know what words mean energetically, there is no issue with you, with the word God, and there is no mix or match in that interpretation or its meaning. And so I tend to use the language that falls under energetic truth. We've got to remember that the word God, or his true name, Sanat Kumara, was used well before any religion came along. The expression, thy father, was there well before Christianity came along. A lot of the terms that are used by religion were well there, well before any religion came along, and they had its true meaning, and it wasn't reinterpreted. It was what it was, and you chose to use it or not in accordance to where you were, but they weren't flavored. They were true in their meaning.
So the words you use in your teaching, you choose because of the energy that they contain and convey, rather than it being of any particular lineage or religion.
Correct. We don't pay any homage to any tradition, cult, religion, or anything. The energy of the word in the end has to be the truth, because everything is energy. So if we reduce everything to its energetic state of being, we quickly or soon derive at the truth.
Mm. And I think that's one of the cornerstones of your work as it's impacted me, is that recognizing everything is an energy, has an energetic vibration. And so that always speaks to the topic of you're either, all of your actions and your words are either healing or they're harming. And as you'll know, I struggled with that one in the back. I wanted some neutral middle ground where I kind of wasn't having an impact one way or the other, where I just had a safe place to hang out. But I've come around. I realize that that energetically is probably true, that we're either healing or we're harming just by our words and our actions.
Yeah, there's no neutral place in energy. Energy has always an emanation, a motion. Even stillness has an emanation and its own level of motion. And we've got to understand that. So therefore, if something is always emanating, it's doing something. So we've got to know what that something is. It can't just be neutral. So it can either be harming or it can be healing. Now, harming and healing is not a judgment. It's actually based on an energetic truth itself. So it comes back to the energy. So that which harms is anything that promotes separation from one's soul. In other words, from the fiery vibration we could be living under and should be living under. And that which heals is that which aligns or helps us realign back to that soulful vibration, which again is energy.
Mm. Bay FM 99.9. This morning we have the company of Serge Ben-Hayon, and you can find out more about Serge and the Arcane School of Livingness on his website, which is www.universalmedicine.com.au. And this morning we're discussing that most talked about subject. It's probably the most pondered and contemplated subject of all time, and that's the subject of God. And who he is, whether he exists or not, and what the energy is between us and God. And Serge has just made reference to fiery energy and pranic energy. So Serge, could we give the listeners just a little background on those two energies and their differences?
Yeah, pranic energy is the energy that comes from the human spirit, that is basically the human form. The idea is to give that form, our humanness, its soulful presence and a soulful expression, which is the fiery energy. So prana is that energy that comes from the spirit. The spirit is the separated form from the soul, which always seeks identification. Therefore, it may seek identification, for example, in the extremes of chronic fatigue, or in its extreme excessiveness, where it would climb Mount Everest to achieve recognition and acceptance. Both ends of the scale bring acceptance and recognition to the spirit, and therefore it doesn't mind whether it has chronic fatigue or climbing Mount Everest. It sounds a bit silly when you present it like that, but in its emotional encasing, it really is that simple. The fiery energy is the stillness, the harmony, the joy, and the love that comes from the soul. And what we've got to do is identify the fact that when we align ourselves to emotions, they are really just racy situations that stimulate the body into some form of identification. And it does not lead to a stillness or a harmony. And therefore we can identify the fact that at that moment we're in prana. Prana is an energy that keeps you separated from the stillness. And it's been misinterpreted in many, many languages and translations. And some people pump their fists up in the air and shout that we should all be pranic and that it's all about prana. And in many ways they're exposed into and where they are. And we've got to be careful that we understand energy, since everything is about energy.
Mm. Okay, so this is a very important definition for people to follow the information that you're bringing forward, is that the soul is the connection to the eternal flame, that's the light that's burning inside of us, and the spirit is actually the egoic avenue to the soul. And so if we are in a spiritual place, or using that terminology under your study, that is still that aspect of ourselves, our personality, that's wanting to be connected, that's trying, but it isn't necessarily the purity of the eternal flame that's burning within us.
It's there. You're on track. The spirit separated from the soul to give itself an identification. The spirit then presents itself as the higher self in light form to its more tangible physical aspect, which is the human form, which it calls or refers, the spirit calls itself the personality. But the spirit and the personality are one and the same. One is more etheric, in other words, more energetic, and one is more tangible, one is more the physical feeling, the flesh. But it's one and the same energy, and that's what's important. So when people refer to the higher self, they're referring to the trickster, to the one that is in illusion. And so what we've got to do is come to the center where the actual egoic nature is. Now, ego is actually a good word. The egoic nature is the center of the spirit and the personality coming together and then equalizing, in other words, not one dominating more than the other. And then when a person achieves that egoic state, the soul then connects and says, okay, now that you've got the left side of your body and the right side of your body working in harmony, from the center we shall be. In other words, it'll start to emanate equally and start to see everyone as that equalness.
Okay, thanks for clarifying that. It's always tricky trying to regurgitate in words and an understanding that you have. So when we, as individuals here on planet Earth, want or need things, even in the realm of our spiritual needs, there's some coloring on that that isn't quite pure then, if we're needing or wanting a spiritual path or community to be with?
Yeah, if we want to simplify the word need to its simplest form and help answer the question that you've asked, that's a great question to ask, because it needs to be clarified before we go any further with anything. And that is, we defend and champion a lot of our needs, and when you start to explain the word need and describe it as something that is not really needed, so to speak, everyone says, well, we need to eat, we need to do this, and then it starts to get a bit silly, and it denatures the level of the conversation that is required to reach that point of truth. So what we need to say is this. In its simplest form, we all need to breathe. Nobody cannot breathe. So we need to breathe. Now, but do we need to breathe our own breath, or are we breathing the breath that life makes us breathe through anxiousness, nervousness, stress, worrying, anger, frustration, emotions, and everything else? So yes, you can say, I need to breathe. I would say, what breath are you breathing? So if you wanted to use the word I or the phrase I need to breathe, then you need to breathe your own breath, and that's what's important. Now, breathing your own breath is really just to breathe in the stillness, to breathe the gentleness that you truly are in any and every situation. That requires some practice and eventually some mastering, and nobody will be able to do it straight away. But that's the key to our good health. That's the key to harmony. That's the key to our longevity in living life in joy and not existing through life and trying to get through, the ability to breathe our own breath.
Mm-hmm. And so the soul in its purity, the essence that it is where the eternal life is the life of the soul. Is that right?
Yeah, the spirit is also eternal in the sense that it keeps reincarnating and coming back, but it reincarnates in its own mess. So at the end of our life, whatever we haven't resolved, is we have to come back and resolve it in whatever way that may be. If it's resistance, then it's a very heavy type of life, and if it's allowing, then it'll be an awarding, enriching and learning life. But eternally, the life of harmony and joy always comes back to reincarnating as a soulful, connected human being. And that's really what our goal is, to connect to our soul, know that connection, and to make sure that when we reincarnate, that connection remains.
Now, the other night we had a bit of a diagram, and I don't know if we can convert this visually on the microphone about the silver cord. And it was quite useful to me, which is why I want to bring it up to see if we can convey this to the listeners, that our connection, our soul connection to our source, is this silver cord that we're kind of picture ourselves connected to but dangling from. And so there's enough movement on it that we can pick up some swaying sort of to the left and the right off of our center point or off of our alignment with our center. And as we swing back and forth, we're not aligned to our center, and that's where we're sort of picking up karmic pathways that we have to retrace our steps on. Is that... Am I going to be able to take you there?
Not having a whiteboard to present the listeners with. We have a direct connection to God, and that's let's assume that if everyone can imagine that to be a straight line. If we sway away from that and deviate to the left or to the right, non-politically, but just to the left or to the right, when we look back towards that, along that line, it still faces towards God, and it still is connected to God, but it's not the center from which we were originally impressed. And so we've got to be honest about that and say, well, we might be looking at this from 2 miles, 3 miles, 8 kilometers, maybe 1,000 kilometers from the original center. And that line will still lead us back to God. But it's going to be a difficult journey back, because it's not straight to God that we go from that wide separation, but back to the center before we can then climb back up that line that first impressed us. And that's what we've got to understand, that line that directly connects us to God is made of love. And if we separate from that love, then we are asking for ourselves to have a long journey back to that.
And so there's a kind of a built-in pull along this line from us to God, that this is where we're all one, and that we are all going to make that journey eventually. We just may not all make it the same way or the same time. But there is a built-in pull back towards God that we all have a sense of.
Yes, we cannot escape that. And the best way to understand that is not to say that we're being pulled towards God, but that we're being pulled towards back to the center. Because if we understand how that silver cord works, if we pull towards our own center, then we will naturally be in line with the way in which we're originally impressed. If we pull towards God and not take notice of that center, or not take into consideration our own center, then we are left with the many meanderings that are out there offering us our way to God, but not knowing what our center is. And therefore, we look for outer influences or outer sources to deliver us up, to deliver us to God, which in truth it's already within. And that's why connecting to our center is the centerpiece of all our truth. And if you understand about the center, that's what the word esoteric means, the innermost. And so the teachings that we produce through universal medicine, the healing, the modalities, the lectures and workshops and courses, are all designed to bring everyone back to their center. Because if we're all in our center, nobody can lie to you. Once you're in your center, that vibration has to be in accordance with what you hear, with what you feel, and what you touch. If you don't take somebody back to their center, they're easy to fool, because you can use the sophistication in word, trickery, through exercises, experiences, and lead almost anyone astray. But when you connect a whole group of people, sometimes 200 as you know, to their center, then you're up there performing or presenting something you cannot escape from, because they are as connected as you are. And the moment you step out of that line, they can feel it. And the idea is to present everybody towards their center so that nobody can be fooled. And then the presenter then has to therefore be in line, and if not, they can be easily exposed.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that feels really clear, and I like the sounds of that. And you have a remarkable ability, as do a few other handful of teachers I've seen, that somehow your centered presence enables others to center themselves more quickly. Sometimes you give us a verbal instruction about doing that through a breathing technique, and sometimes just being in your presence helps draw us to our own center because you've led by example. Are there things that the listeners could do for themselves and their families or whatever groups of people they may be with that we could tell them that would help them to start get to their center?
The greatest thing to center oneself really is to breathe your own breath. But those words are simple to those who know what that breath is. And to breathe your own breath really means to not breathe your family situation, your partner's situation, even your kids' situation. It really is to breathe the gentleness of your own breath and to keep that breath yours during any situation. As I said earlier, it does take a bit of practice and then eventually a mastering. But we do really need to breathe our own breath, and that's the cornerstone of everything that we do. In the sense of presenting myself and allowing others to feel centered by my presence, it's really not my presence. It's the fact that in presenting yourself in your own stillness, you allow others to also meet their own. A presenter, a teacher, should never give you that wow effect, because if they do, they're usually imposing. You should be still enough to not impose on another. And if a person doesn't feel imposed upon, they can then quickly realign to the point where they feel that they don't need to impress you, they don't need to be accepted or recognized, because you're meeting them by their own stillness. And that then allows one and then the whole group to really get centered, because there's nothing being asked of them but just to be.
That's excellent, and I really get that. If people are pushing a message, you automatically go into some sort of defense, which takes you out of your center, because you're not really open to then receiving it. So, thanks for that. Good morning. For those listeners who may just be joining us, we're talking this morning with Serge Benhayon. Serge has been practicing as an energetic healer and teacher here on the North Coast since the late 90s. He conducts workshops and teaches large groups both here in the Northern Rivers, but also in the UK. And this morning we've been talking a little bit about the last lesson that we had in the School of Livingness. So I might just mention that that will be on again in 2008. You don't necessarily need to have attended in 2007 if this is of interest to you. You just need to go to his website and register each time, because they're held out at Ewingsdale Hall. And generally the halls kind of packed to the edges each time, although Serge and I were just commenting that it's interesting that just this number of people who fit in the hall turn up every time, even though there's a fluctuation of maybe about a quarter of the people are ones who haven't necessarily been there before. Everyone's drawn to attend the sessions that they need to hear or participate in. So if you might be interested in that, you can get that on his website, universalmedicine.com.au. And on the left-hand menu, click on Events Arcane Project, probably is how you get there. And so that will be on again for 2008. And I was just saying to Serge, where should we go next with the interview? He wasn't inclined to go any one particular direction. And I said, well, I want to talk about self-love. And he said that would be high on the agenda for this year's school. So let's go there, Serge. Self-love.
Okay, just before we go to self-love, just to clarify, those who cannot make the Arcane Project is also available as an audio download through the website. So we have over 300 students who also participate with the Arcane Project as an interactive live recording. Shortly after that night's evening, which they're recorded. So there's also, as I said, 300 worldwide plus who are listening in. So if you can't make them, they are available as an audio download as well.
Right.
And that's all on the website, so they can chase that up. Self-love this year is going to be a strong theme for Universal Medicine. It always has been. But we've been focusing a lot on presenting the differences between spirit and soul, prana and fire, what healing is, healing, harming, and so forth, leading up to 2008. But between now and 2012, the strong message will be self-love. And whilst we've been delivering principles and techniques and practices that deliver us to our center, in the end, it is really about self-love. Now, self-love is not an indulgence in the sense that I'll sit back and buy myself something because that's what I want to have. Because that can come from a momentum of an ill choice. So it's not about choices. Self-love comes from an impulse that exists in our livingness. In other words, from our stillness. And it's about constructing a way of life that one moment lived in stillness leads to the next moment that will be lived in stillness. Now, stillness, for those listeners who don't, who haven't participated with our work before, doesn't mean not moving. It means keeping the physiology in harmony so that the physical body can express in that harmony.
Mm-hmm. And so self-love is about attending to our soul. It's about being on our soul, being connected to our soul.
In truth, if we want to get very, very strict on its meaning, self-love is the act that leads us to our soul. The soul itself is love. It cannot be but love. Once we are soulful, we are in love, in the true meaning of that word. So to self-love is really the passage towards the soul. And for the next 4 years, we're going to keep that as a strong theme, because 2012 is a very, very important time energetically. There's not the end of the world and all that sort of cataclysmic things that are happening or being predicted, but it really is about only being in love. And from then on, things are going to get shaky if people are choosing to resist self-love or being in love. So self-love is the passage to the soul. It's about learning how to be loving in every way as a human being, and sometimes in contradiction to everything that we've ever been taught, so that we can connect to that center and know who we are by the livingness of that center, which is love.
Mm-hmm. And every choice we make, if I just heard you a minute ago, you're saying every choice we make, it leads to the next choice that we make, or it sets the stage for us.
Yeah, there is a rhythm to that life that we all need to really understand. The best way to present it is all of us have been taught or to think that at the end of the day we can sleep our troubles away, that we can just go to sleep and wake up the next morning and it'll all be gone. Now, our sleep is basically the rhythm of our daily life. And anything that we live by during that day is always going to be with us when we sleep. Therefore, if you want to have a truly good night's sleep, live the day in the true good that you want to be, and then your sleep will reflect that rhythm at night. And this is it. This is an indication of how living from one moment to the next builds each moment to be the better and better one, or the stiller and stiller moment. So if you are one of those people that disregard during the day and then can't wait to sleep at night to forget the day, then you are going to be in the same ill pattern. So the idea is to choose during the day the best possible life you know you can have to begin with, so that your night's sleep reflects that. And then if you do that, you will wake up in that rhythm and therefore have a great start the next day, rather than using sleep to numb yourself or get over the day that hasn't been well lived.
Mm-hmm. That's a great analogy, because we all know that pattern of being awake and then needing a good night's sleep and not necessarily getting it. Now, Serge, I also want to just talk about what we were talking about off air, which is this subtle awareness of the energy around. And this morning I'm very aware that the energy, sometimes in a day you just wake up and it seems that the energy around me is different than what I'm used to or something. So then I have a moment of, well, is it energy within me that I'm putting out that's different, or is there something energetically outside of me that's different that I have to respond to? And part of my journey this past year has been really taking the time to be aware of the energetic levels of myself and of others and of the environment, and taking measure of that and factoring it into the decisions that I make. And we've just stumbled upon a parallel in the way you're talking about universal medicine is teaching in an arena that's a little bit different now than it has been the last few years, which is it's a bit broader. It's not quite as formal, the structure of the delivery. Is that a fair way to say that?
That is a fair way to describe it. 2008 numerically, esoterically, numerically is a new beginning. And for the next 4 years, is a bit of a prediction for the listeners. The next 4 years, people are going to experience an openness like they've never ever experienced before. But that openness isn't just what we think it is. It's a very exposing openness. And we're basically going to live 4 years with no energetic boundaries. In the past, everyone's had a secluded effect that was surrounding them. Basically, the quality of their lifestyle was what that seclusion was made of. And we would impose on one another by puncturing into that seclusion or auric field what it was. From now on until the 2012, there's going to be a major openness. So the delivery of universal medicine is far more wide-reaching and not just appealing to those who are looking for the answers, but many more who will be looking for the answers as they too will become more and more exposed in the energy they have truly been living in. So the next 4 years are going to be very exposing and very revealing to everybody.
Okay. And so not to let that unsettle people, because it does have a bit of an unsettling effect as you become aware of the boundaries that have been removed or the fences that have been taken down that we were talking about this morning. And that can be just a little bit of the old pattern for me is to fall into anxiety about that, because I feel unsure, something's different, something's shifted, so the anxiety levels start to go up. But I'm able to watch that now and drop the anxiety that goes with that, because somehow my safety zone has increased, even though the safety factors don't look quite as secure as they used to. And so this is, people may be experiencing that as an energetic thing that starts in 2008.
If we can suggest something to help along those lines, we would say that to welcome the unsettled feeling, not to buy into it, but just to observe it as you have been, and you'll see that what is being unsettled is something that wasn't working anyway. We tend to want to hold close to us that which is safe, but that which is safe is usually what's familiar and most comfortable. But our bodies tend to tell us the truth, so what's comfortable may end up being cancer. What's comfortable may end up being arthritis or diabetes and so forth. So we're given an opportunity to be unsettled in a way that we are untangling that which is not working. So those who will feel unsettled most are the ones that are basically tangled up in a web that is not really serving them. They will try and fight and resist and perhaps get a little anxious about the unsettlement that is going on in and around them. But it's actually a good thing, because it's untangling that which is not going to give them something that is true. And 2012 is an important time, because love is going to be stronger than in any other time. The energy of love is going to be stronger than any other time. So those who are entangled in pranic forms or in emotional love are really going to feel it. And so the next 4 years is a way to prepare them to actually accept the fact that love is not what they thought it was, and it actually is a stillness, a harmony, and a joy that is not found in entertainment, comfort, numbingness, and distraction. So there has to be a much more real effect of what love truly is. And this period leading up to 2012 is our opportunity to be revealed openness and unsettled in that which is not working.
We're talking this morning with Serge Ben-Hayan. He's known as the healer's healer. There are many healers at his lectures and attending his workshop. He communicates sacred teachings throughout esoteric healing. Serge is the author of two books to date. The second book's called The Treatise on Consciousness, and his first book, The Way It is listed. Did you know this, Serge? You know Abraxas Bookshop over here? They did a bestseller list for 2007, and your book's on that list.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I noticed that when I was in there, yeah. So we'll have another short music break, and then we'll be back to talk to Serge about his third book, which isn't out yet. It's a few months down the track. It's called The Way of Initiations. Is that right? Stay tuned. Bay FM 99.9. It's 9:33, 25 degrees here in the Bay. The markets are on. No rain so far this morning. That was Chris James from his CD, Fiery Eyes. And you're tuned to Bay FM 99.9. I'm Gail Q, your host on Sunday mornings. And the intention of this program is to give you breakfast for your soul. Our guest this morning is Serge Ben-Hayon. And we're going to talk next about his third book, which is not yet out. It's called The Way of
Initiations.
And what's that title implying?
The Way of Initiation. The word initiation in the esoteric context means awareness. Developing one's awareness. So The Way of Initiation is a book that will help people over the next 4 years as they head towards the main goal, which is to be in love. In other words, The Way of Initiations will help everybody develop self-love by giving them the five key principles that will develop them a steady step towards that passage of self-love that delivers you to that place of love, which is the body of the soul within.
Okay, so this book will be a very useful resource for us over the next 4 years.
Yes, the book is almost ready. It's in its editing stage at the moment. The problem with the way I write is that I'm often writing two or three books at the same time. So I've written quite a lot of in book four and five already, and it tends to slow down the process. But it's still one book per year is our current rhythm, and that's a nice rhythm to be in. Mm-hmm. The books need to be read a few times to be understood, not because they're not easy to understand, but there is a deeper meaning within each paragraph that needs to be revisited, and people get that aha effect of thinking that they thought they read through that, but when they read it again, it has a different meaning to it. And that's deliberate. That's the way esoteric writing is scripted and written, and that's its formula.
And I've often discovered with reading that material that it is presented in a rhythm that isn't one we're used to, and that's on purpose, because if we use rhythm patterns that we're used to, then our brain interprets the words in a set way that we've taken on years ago. And so by just changing the rhythm, breaking it up in another way, the words actually have a different pathway in. And it is sometimes a little bit difficult to read in that it's just against the rhythms that you're used to, so you just have to go back and read it again. And often with the work of universal medicine, you do get the same message many times, just presented in different ways, because it's important to get the message, and so have to come at it from different ways. Now, there's an excerpt on the website from Book 3, and Serge, I wanted to ask you to talk about that a little bit, which is the difference between heart and inner heart.
Yeah, this is important, and we've put that up on our website under the left-hand column under readings, and it's an excerpt from the book. Well, forthcoming book three, there is a big difference between the heart and the inner heart. The heart is that egoic place. It's the place where the spirit and the personality meet. And it's a great place to be if you compare it to everything else outside that place. But when you actually connect to the inner heart, then the heart is really not the place to be, because it really is still a pranic place. It's still a place full of illusion. It's still a place that allows the mind to equally meet its own thoughts, and therefore it's a place that still allows beliefs and ideals to have their place. Whereas in the inner heart, there is no place for ideals and beliefs. The inner heart lives off truth. It lives off the impulses of what energy is. It lives off harmony, stillness, and joy first, and then can see everything else that is not within those rhythms.
So Is the inner heart a physical location within the body? Is it in the heart, or is it more of a non-physical space?
All our physical body will always take the shape of our energetic state of being. So if we, for example, and I'm glad you've raised that, if we, for example, connect to our heart, our actual physical heart muscle, which sits just to the left of that center place in our chest, will then take on the energetic resemblance of that center. In other words, you'll be loving a very emotional type of love, which puts pressure on the aorta and the veins and so forth of the heart. But if you take the connection of the inner heart, then the physical muscle, the heart, then becomes a completely different rhythm, and it emanates a much more quieter, more still pulse and rhythm that actually helps the vascular system align with the lymphatic system and therefore gives your body a much more harmonious disposition. So the physical aspect of our body is always a result of the energetic state of being or energetic aspect we put ourselves in. And so it's important to understand which part of the heart you're connecting to. But to coming back to the specific question that you ask, it's in the center of your chest. There's a heart center there, an energy center. So you can connect to that, or you can connect to the inner heart, which is the innermost of that center.
Mm-hmm. And while you were talking, it made me think of this study I read this week where these women who clean motel rooms were always tired from the hard physical work. But as a study in one of the large hotels, they put up some signs that said to these women, changing sheets on a double bed was the equivalent of so much exercise, and vacuuming created this much cardiovascular. And they left those signs up for a couple of months, and then the study group of women who had been told that this cleaning actually equated to health, they had a drop in blood pressure, and they actually physically became healthier because they had changed their mindset about what their work. And they did the same study on a group of women who hadn't been advised that, who didn't have an increase in health. So the state of our thinking about our physical being really does have an effect on it.
Correct. And even stronger to that is the energetic state of being that we are in. Because the mind can change the consciousness that we do things under, but the energetic state of being in the end is what will be the prevailing overall over the mind and the physical body as well. So that's a great study, and that's very true.
Mm-hmm. So just the fact that they believed they were going to be healthier helped them achieve that. Now, is that an energetic change, or is that a mind change for them?
The mind cannot change the body. You have to align to the consciousness of what that change is suggesting. So, for example, if the suggestion was look at changing sheets as being part of exercise rather than a laborious chore or
back-breaking
exercise, then if the person says, yes, I can see that, then they've changed their energetic conditioning towards the way in which they will do that. It isn't just the thinking, but their predisposition towards that actually allows that to be. Because if you still believe that you were doing a chore and chanted in your mind that this is exercise, it doesn't work. You have to actually change energetically to the consciousness of what is being suggested. In other words, you have to endorse the fact that it is exercise. It's not just the mind that does it.
Right. Okay. Well, I need to take that on because I've recently come into a position where I've noticed that I've fallen into a problem-solving mentality. Everything's about another problem to be solved. And I became aware of that thinking this week and thought, oh, no, I need to shift that. So I'll work on that because I can see that will create a different rhythm to everything that's being presented, so it'll look like something different than a problem, huh? Good. We're going to have one more music break, and then we'll be back just to wrap up the interview with Serge. Bay FM 99.9. We're talking this morning with Serge Ben-Hayon. In fact, we're going to be saying goodbye to Serge. But before we do, I wanted to just touch base with your New Year's message, which the last couple of years has been observe, not absorb. And I see that's still the message for this new year, but with a little bit of extension into the self-love energy that we're heading into. But I thought we might just go out with you reminding the listeners about this very important couple of words, observe, not absorb.
Yeah. Observe is to view all life and to live in it and by it, but not be affected by it. In other words, there is always going to be something that affects us in one way or another, but we can limit that. And it's important to limit that and not associate or believe that life has to be lived by absorbing everything or being involved in anything and everything, because there are many things that are way beyond what we can do and there's nothing we can do about it. And the greater understanding that of that particular instance or life experience is that it's part of a karmic cycle anyway, and we should allow it to be in the way it is. But to take those on unnecessarily puts us into a stress, a condition which is vascular or a condition which is spleen or splenic in the body, and it's not necessary for us to absorb what is going on in life. To keep it as very, very simple as possible, to observe life, to live it, to enjoy it, to experience it, but not absorb it. When you find yourself absorbing it, breathe your own breath and allow it to just simply remove itself from you, so that you understand that in every situation you are who you are by the quality of the breath that you breathe for yourself. So it's no point breathing, for example, what's going on in another country or breathing, for example, the outcome of a sporting match that hasn't had its result yet, and people get stressed and affected by the outcome and you can feel the anxiousness in your body and all that. And we call that the enjoyment of watching sport, but ask any health professional, that takes a toll on the body. And so it's unnecessary to absorb something you have completely no control of. Particularly a sporting match where the referee could make a certain decision, somebody could allow a goal in or make an error or some spectacular move from someone else. So absorbing a situation like that is just going to be ill for the body. So the key is to observe it, enjoy it, by all means, if that's what you choose to do, but definitely not absorb what's going on, because it's a very ill impact in your body. And if the listeners want to take that further, you can go onto the website. You don't have to be a member. It's on our homepage, front page, the message of observe and not absorb, and which has been a strong theme for us since late 1999, and we'll continue to do so. All we've done now is added the extra spice of self-love in absorb and not absorbing.
The extra spice, I like that. And that can be as simple as, say, phone calls. Like, you know, this morning I've had to take phone calls when we're off air. And sometimes, depending on the energy of the caller on the other end and what the situation is, it's easy to start to absorb that when you're talking with other people. But so it can be brought down to very simple examples of your daily life, of people you bump into on the street or phone calls or even in emails, that we have to be careful not to absorb the things that are coming at us all the time and step into a place of observing them.
Yeah, the energy that comes with things isn't always what is presenting, and so it's very, very important to observe and feel. And that's what you learn when you observe. You learn to feel, because if you start to absorb something well before you have understood what it truly is, it's sometimes a little bit too late energetically.
Mm-hmm. Serge, thanks so much for coming in this morning. Now, Serge's website is www.universalmedicine.com.au. And if you want an appointment, though, with Serge for a personal healing, you need to ring the clinic, which is 6624-3706. Serge, thanks for coming in and welcoming in 2008 with the Bay FM listeners. And I'll see you at the next session of the School of Livingness out at Ewensdale Hall.
Commencing in February, yes.
Yep, Friday nights still.
Yes, once a month this year.
I noticed they were a little... I assume that accommodates your overseas travel and...
No, in fact, the reduction in the number... We felt that that was too much delivery twice a month for people to really take in. And we decided to do it once a month to deliver the same message, the same sutra, but give everybody a month to really digest. It was just a bit too much. I felt that the sutras were too strong to take in on a fortnightly basis.
Right. Okay. Good. Good enough. Well, I'll see you there.